Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to the Roundtable. I am your host, Mickey Hall. This show is presented by the Multi-Ethnic Sports Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame was founded by Arif Khatib in 2000 to give the world an opportunity to better understand the impact African Americans made in professional sports and society. We presented induction ceremonies in New York, Seattle, Puerto Rico, Los Angeles, Ethiopia, Nairobi, Kenya, Virgin Islands, Houston, Atlantic City, Philadelphia, Oakland Bay Area, Las Vegas, Palm Springs, and Halifax, Nova Scotia. Please check out our website at www.afrosportshall.com to find all the latest events that are coming up. I just want to remind everyone that today's show will be archived 1 hour after this live broadcast, so you can listen whenever you want. Also, this is going to be our last show for the 2017 year. We're shutting down a little bit early this year so that we can prepare for the 2018 year. We will be replaying a couple of your favorite podcasts, one from Arif and the Judge, and on the week of the 25th, one of Denise Newton's favorite podcasts. So rest assured, we will be back with new shows that you will hear no place else in 2018. And with that, I want to start our last show of 2017 by saying that I am so happy to invite a dear friend as today's guest, Miss Tina Diella. Miss Tina Diella is owner and founder of the Tina Diella Consulting and is a performance coach, casting director, workshop facilitator, and actor. Tina has worked with industry professionals, helping to cast thousands of actors in film and TV. Such projects Tina has been a part of casting include I Almost Got Away With It, Wives with Knives, and Campus Crimes, and other Indigo film productions. Featured films such as Contagion and independent films such as Mavericks, Quitters, and Diary of a Teenage Girl, the pilot TV show Alcatraz, and the HBO TV series Looking. Tina has worked as a professional actor for over 20 years in theater, film, television, commercials, and has been a media spokesperson in her previous years of nonprofit work. In on-camera acting classes, she practices and learns on-camera technique, improvisation, cold read, and scene study. Tina's phrase, "It's a good day," is about combining Alexander technique and high-performance communication to bring out the best in all of us when we speak. So I am so happy to welcome Miss Tina Diella to the Roundtable. Tina, welcome.
Thank you so much. I am thrilled and honored to be here. Yay.
Yay. I know. Yay. It's like I said earlier, it's like old friends getting together.
Exactly.
You
Yes.
and I go way back to our Boston days.
Yes, we do, Triple Play. Yes. Amazing.
Yeah. So why don't we just tell the folks how you got started in acting and how you made the move from the East Coast to the West Coast.
Sure. Well, I knew from when I was a kid that I wanted to express myself through the vehicle of acting because I was compelled by sort of performance and communication on a level of both play as a kid. Like, I think I understood, you know, oh, you get up and you just, you know, pretend and make believe and improvise. But also, I was always looking for strong female and women role models that really spoke to me, that I wanted to emulate and also, you know, have my voice be heard and make a contribution. So I had this desire as a child already. And in Boston, there is a queer scene, which is good. And when I graduated college, so the 90s, I was doing everything from sort of spoken word and some solo performance, and I was doing some theater. And this was still when people were just shooting on film. So for instance, students that were working on their master's thesis. So I already was doing acting work professionally on the stage. I was doing solo performance work. I was a Latina lesbian Groucho Marx, if you can believe it. And all these things stemmed from, you know, even my childhood. So watching old movies and being inspired by slapstick comedy and screwball comedy and folks like Rita Hayworth and Lena Horne. And so I would create my own stories. I'd perform them. I'd write them. I'd write them as characters, prose, et cetera. So I was doing some of that, but then suddenly I was involved in a couple student film productions. So I also really, they always say, you know, you were bitten by the actor bug is what they call it. So I was bitten by that bug because I was very curious. I'm like, I'd love to do more film. And what drew me to the Bay Area was I actually did see that there would be opportunities to do both solo performance, theater, but also here people do have agents. There is a Northern California SAG-AFTRA office, and some Bay Area actors do work in LA, like even the Fringe Festival comes here to the Bay Area, and there's great places like StageWorks and the Marsh and the Brava Theater that really drew me to the Bay Area, as well as the presence of folks who are out as LGBTQIA that were performing, seeing, you know, even more Latina performers. I had actually interviewed, if you can believe, in like 1994, I interviewed Marga Gomez when I was living in Boston, when she was coming out to Boston to perform at the Queer Theater Rhinoceros. Yes. So, you know, so coming out here and being able to, you know, keep building on the relationships and meeting new people, and not only building relationships as an actor, but also people would say things like, are you just a community talent kind of agent because you connect people? So we would make up different names, like me and my friends, and I'd say, yeah, just send people my way and I'll connect them. I'll connect talent. So I was drawn here. I did get an agent. I kept working both in the stage and on camera. I did all of the on-camera work until I had to join the union before I got my first must-join union gig. But I was doing sort of all of the, you know, sort of corporate industrial stuff that actors do on the side to make money. But my first break was The Pursuit of Happiness. I had lines in that film, and that started the ball rolling for me into the SAG union. So I did have a vision when I came here that even though this wasn't you know, a huge, large city with tons of work, that there was a variety of work, that there was a political, cultural love and desire and energy and interest that drew me here, and that I felt like, you know, I could be part of this community here in the Bay Area, and I want to be part of this community. I feel like there's phenomenal artists, you know, and performers and actors and activists. And when, you know, if you don't know a sort of subsection of the arts, and then you just kind of walk into it and start paying attention, it's, I feel like it's overwhelming. You'll be like, oh my, you know, you'll realize there's tons of them. So I'll just give an example. Since I'm right now working on a solo show, Overlook Latinas, with my director, Mary Guzman, if you don't know solo performance, let's say, you could go anywhere in the Bay Area and see tons of it. You would see it, you know, people of all ages, people of color, folks with disabilities, queer and trans people, in various languages, using different forms of media, using a variety of kinds of spaces, not just in San Francisco, also in the East Bay, also, you know, in San Jose, et cetera. So that's the exciting thing, you know, is sort of is falling in love with the Bay Area over and over again and finding, you know, finding different places where it's like, you know, oh my gosh, I didn't know that, you know, people perform jazz over here. So any rate, I think what drew me to solo performance was probably even still being a kid, was sort of creating those stories and creating those characters and building a whole, you know, building a whole arc and telling a whole story. And I realized that in my storytelling, acting, performing, I like to tell fictional stories because then the characters just can go sort of crazy and be fully themselves. That doesn't have to be Tina D'Elia. It can be, you know, somebody else that's going through things that maybe I'm also going through too, but sort of, you know, I get to experience it through another person. And I found that my skill, that where I wanted to go, was I like being multiple characters in a show and multiple characters talking to each other, loving each other, having sex with each other, fighting with each other, arguing with each other in conflict, but that I have to learning the craft of being very fast, of changing character, voice, body, any rate. So, yes. So all this is to say that the work started in Boston, but it continued here, and there is a community and a support, and I've been stuff that I've been involved in. So,
wow. And for a person who's seen your creativeness on the stage, I mean, it's just so fascinating how you can switch your character in a heartbeat, as opposed to having just one set role. That's
right.
You know, describe the focus and the preparation you have to go through for a role like that.
Yeah. Thank you. I love that question. I love talking about the artist process. I cannot underscore enough the rehearsal process on many levels. So I believe that for myself, but I also believe for all performers, that when we're working so hard to be so refined and for things to be so specific, it always takes rehearsal, like a pro athlete, you know, just so specific, because one, it's warming up the body, it's warming up the voice. We need both, because performance and acting is not stuck in the head. It is the fully embodied person. So we need to be, so I need to be warmed up, you know, voice and body. And I need structure and continuation. So for a lot of us solo performers, I'm going to tell you big secrets. For myself, sometimes it's like, oh no, I got to go off and go rehearse by myself because it gets lonely and there's nobody there and the motivation can be hard because there is something about rehearsing with other people. Like, okay, we're all getting up on doing it and we feel each other's energy and we're working hard for each other. Great. And it's totally different having a director or a coach in the room, of course, because then we have somebody that, you know, gonna perform for, I'm gonna get notes, I'm gonna get feedback. So there is an upward battle around when you are a solo performer. I think I'll quote Monica Gomez saying it best, like, you know, the cast parties can get very lonely. So true.
It is.
So it's like, right, it's like after the show, it's like, actually, right, like a lot of times people will even say, like, now you're all with me. Okay, now we're all going to go somewhere together. So because it can sort of be like, you know, like, oh, my gosh, so nice to see everybody. And then, you know, and then it's like, right, oh, okay, now good night. Oh, okay, you know, and then you're no longer sort of in that, right, collective space. So so rehearsal with a director, rehearsal with a coach. And then what is always encouraged is finding peers and doing peer rehearsals and swapping rehearsals and having each other watch each other. And, you know, and some people will even say, like, oh, I'm not even a coach, or I'm just a person that lives down the hallway. Like, you know what? Anything helps. And another set of eyes helps, because in solo performance that I do, because I'm telling a story and I'm playing characters, I like having people who don't know my work and don't see it as well. Because if they get lost, that's important for me to know. You know, sometimes people see my work so much that they forget, like, oh, you know, I'm familiar with it. So it's great to have sets of eyes in your work. It's always important to rehearse. And what happens if you under rehearse is it does show, because when I performed Monday night, I was in good shape because I had performed Sunday night and I had been rehearsing up until then. So then anything that I wanted to, you know, tweak Sunday night, I was able to do Monday night. And what happens in solo performance when you do go fast, because you were asking that question, what do you do to really process, is so there are ways to feel the refineness of working on a character and a bunch of characters talking to each other, which is so one character could be yelling at another character, and then you have to become that other person. So there is something about being somebody and saying something, and then you've got to get into somebody else, into their body, and respond back and say something else. You know, and then get into somebody else's body and then respond back again.
So, yeah.
Right. So it is just like anyone that does, you know, amazing juggling, and then they do a flip, backflip, and then they play the harmonica, and then they're on a tricycle. It's literally having to, completely embody every single character, see where the mistakes are. We call it bleeding. So when you bleed into one character, another means that you're not being precise. And so the more that you rehearse it, just like the person on the tricycle, and then they got to get the harmonica, it becomes literally that, you know, my brain is responding. My DNA is responding to literally I'm one person waiting for a response from somebody else. So I do it so many times that I'm experiencing it as real, that I'm experiencing it as I'm really, I really need to give you an answer now. And then I'm fully into somebody else hearing that question and then responding right back. And you can do it faster, but of course you have to start from the beginning and do it slowly. I don't expect that somebody, you know, knew how to hit a home run when they were like 3 years old, the first time they picked up a bat.
Exactly.
Right?
So
it became this, so muscle memory, that's what, also what I mean by DNA. It's like, so what starts to happen is I don't have to, it's not like I'm telling my brain to do everything. It becomes so, second nature, because I've fully learned how to be one person and say what I have to say and be heard. And what's funny is that the more you really want to be in that person, even the person. So if I'm playing my character, Carmelita's like, right now I'm Carmelita. I don't want to jump out of Carmelita right away. Like, like, let me have my five seconds. And then Angel Torres, the Puerto Rican Butch Dyke, she wants her minute. So then she's like, hold on, everybody listen to me. So, you know, like, no, don't talk over me, people, you know, like, you know, because what, somebody's going to talk over her. So, I find that what's happening is I start to allow that the fully embodying is not that me, Tina, I'm sort of telling every character it's not like I'm no longer having to like program a computer in a, you know, intellectually, and it is like, you know, it's like, I don't know how to, I feel like it's like, you know, diving into the water and knowing that it's, and allowing that it's all going to happen, because once all the work has happened so much, like, for instance, somebody is 6'4", and somebody else is 4'11", meaning the characters. So the more that I get used to, I'm looking up, I'm looking down, I'm pointing down, I'm pointing up, I'm hunching over, I'm not hunching over, I'm on high heels, I'm wearing combat boots. So the more that I know who I'm in, so all those details, like, they can take hours and weeks and months and sometimes years. But what happens is that the repetition becomes so much more of our muscle memory and my muscle memory that the reminders, you know, if I've been away from those characters, I'm not going to be in their bodies as much. But when I'm working on them and working with my director and my people, I get back into my body, I get back into their bodies, and I get back into their mindsets and their voices and their dialects, and I start using them again, and then, right, I'm able to jump in and go, ah, yes, okay, now I'm in this rhythm, and I'm not letting them bleed.
Wow. You know, and see, and you know, for those who don't understand, just the flipping back and forth. Now, you must have done something fantastic, because back in 2015, did you not have the best sold-out performance with your Rita Hayworth one-woman
show? Yes, that's right. that was great. That was really great. Yes.
It was awesome.
That was really, really fun. Yes.
It was, because, and even back then, one of your directors, you know, I when I was just, you know, getting my info together about you and reading the replies and the remarks from your past performances, you know, David Ford said, you know, Tina has that magic talent, you know, to have fun and to move the audience at the same time, you know, because that is extraordinary. I've been to performances where, you know, you could just sit there and just be waiting to get into it. But with you, the moment you take that seat and the lights go down, you feel your excitement as you come out onto that stage.
Thank you.
Yes. So yes, it's awesome to see. Now tell people about your one woman show.
Yes.
That sounds like it's going to be awesome.
Thank you. So
Overlook Latinas.
Yes. So my newest solo show I'm working on and developing with Mary Guzman and David Ford at the Marsh is called Overlook Latinas. And there's two things going on in the show at the same time. So there's sort of, I want to call it present day, but it's set in the future. It's set in January 21st, 2021. Don't worry, the election turned out. Yep. Don't worry, the election turned out way better this time. January 21st, 2021. So we're in the future, but present day with characters. These characters, a couple of them existed in the Rita Hayworth of this generation. So they've crossed over. However, they'll be new for lots of people. Great. Mm-hmm. So Puerto Rican Butch Dyke, Angel Torres, and gender nonconforming person, her best friend, Carla Garcia. They are from New York. They've traveled a lot. They've lived in other cities now, like Las Vegas and L.A. They have the opportunity of a lifetime to shoot a television pilot in New York City, produced by NBC, called Overlooked Latinas. And their TV pilot is about Dolores Del Rio, Lupe Valdez, Ramon Navarro, Rosario Rivelletes, and Pedro Armendariz. So up-and-coming Latino, Latina stars from the 1930s to the 1950s that came from Mexico and made it in Hollywood during the McCarthy era, the Red Scare, and World War II, and then even leading into the Lavender Scare. So we learn some history, and we see some tragedy along the way of these icons that we've had in our history of Latin cinema. And, what happened to these people's lives. So the loves they couldn't have, they had to be in the closet. They felt they couldn't live being unwed mother, getting cancer on a film set because the set had was near radiation. And then, of course, being deported and being blacklisted and deported during the McCarthy era. So we don't always hear about what happens in the history of Latino and Latina cinema and what happened for women and et cetera. Unless we're looking for that history that is in the context of, let's say, cinema or history in the United States, cinema and how it's affecting sort of different icons that are Latino and Latina. So the pilot is very serious that Angel and Carla want to shoot. Of course, the producers are thinking, let's have some fun. Where's Rita Hayworth? They say, okay, we'll bring Rita Hayworth into the show. But Rita Hayworth happens to be the very sexy and powerful Carmelita, which is an old flame of Angel. Well, Angel's wife is not happy about Carmelita being on set. And Angel's wife, Lena, also wants to get pregnant immediately. So she's even looking at, are there any cast members that might be, good sperm donors for her? So she's going to want to have a baby no matter what. So we've got, old flames, people wanting babies, and poor Carla is eating, dingle donuts and crumb bum cookies because she's very stressed out, because they're very stressed out trying to hold the production together while there's some lesbian drama on set. Great. So multiple things going on, but I do intend with this solo show to bring, one, some comedy, because we all need comedy right now. So this is a bedroom farce because, again, there are people that are creating a lot of drama and stir. And I also wanted you know, I also wanted people that didn't know about some of our history as, you know, as queer Latinas or as Latinas, and folks that identify on the spectrum of mixed race, like myself as well, Latina, that that if we don't find ways to pass this on, we won't even sort of see where our legacy has come from. And and the vehicle, you know, and the vehicle of film has always been very, very powerful. But also what happened to our peoples as well is that they were impacted by systems of government in the U.S. that are still affecting people today, hence deporting and bans and walls. And so, yes, what happens is, right, history repeats itself and, you know, fascism repeats itself. So I have been having a great time working with Mary Guzman, who I did work with on the Rita Hayworth of This Generation. So she's an award-winning Latina lesbian film director, and she directs solo performance. So she also had won awards with me as well at the Fringe for the Rita Hayworth of This Generation, the sold-out shows and the Best of Fringe. And so now she's directing me at Overlook Latinas, and we are doing a reading at the Brava Theater Studio May 8th, which is very exciting. And then Brava is co-producing a three-week run of the show in the studio space. So I would say look for it the end of 2018, the beginning of 2019. But in the meantime, I'll keep performing excerpts in San Francisco so that people can kind of see previews along the way. But if they, but for folks that are really interested in going to readings, there will be a public reading on Tuesday, May 8th. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited to be working with the Brava Theater. And again, who doesn't want to laugh at a screwball comedy farce queer Latina show? I do.
I know.
Right?
You're right. We do need some laugh, you know?
Yes.
You know, we're coming up to the halfway mark, Tina.
Sure,
what I want
sure.
to do is give your info on how people can reach you. You know,
sure.
Because we're going to start talking about all the other things you do with your public speaking, classes, and yeah. So tell people how they can reach you.
Yes. So I have a website for my solo performance and acting, which is tinadalia.com. So that's great. So that's mm-hmm. the tinadalia.com actor, solo performer. And then for my casting and public speaking and coaching work that I do, teaching work that I do to actors and public speakers is tinadaliaconsulting.com. So
wow.
two ways to reach me, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I would love to talk about other things that I do, including coaching public speaking. Great.
Yes, definitely. Let me take a brief minute. I only have two announcements to make. And one of them, of course, is to announce the Multi-Ethnic Sports Hall of Fame is presenting its 18th annual induction and community award ceremony, February 23rd, 2018, at Scott's Restaurant in Jack London. And folks, you need to get your tickets as soon as possible, because I think Arif saved the best for last. The class of 2018 is just awesome. Daryl LaMonconic from football. We've got Dr. Kurt Marshall, track and field. Sherry Sam, WNBA player, just to name a few. And we'll have some more surprises. You know, the community people that are going to be honored as well include Sisters on the Links, Al Attles, former NBA player and coach, Gordon Parks, his family. So it's really going to be a sellout get your tickets early. If you would like to sponsor, please check out our website at www.afrosportshall.com. All the information is there. Also, for you Paris lovers, we are proud to announce that the Multi-Ethnic Sports Hall of Fame is going to Paris May of 2018. Again, check out the information that's on the website. This is going to be a group of about 20 people. So it's going to be a first come, first serve. So get the information as soon as possible. If you need information right away, please give us a call and we will get back to you and shoot out the information. But it's going to be a hot time in Paris. So that's it with the announcements. Now let's get back to just your everything else that you do on top of all this great solo work and performance. You are so passionate about getting us to speak our best. Tell us about your public speaking classes, man, because I hear they're awesome, and I'm going to make it to there as soon as I can.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you. Thank you, Missy. Yes, I love teaching public speaking because I really love seeing everyone be in their authentic self and their authentic voice and convey themselves in, you know, in authenticity. And what that means, and what's nice is you might hear themes in, that I bring up over time. What that means is that speakers get a sense of, I'm not just speaking from my head. Again, I always point at my head when I say it, even though, even if you don't see me, I'm still pointing at my head. And the reason why is because I think it's a reminder to me, and when I show people that I'm pointing at my head, it reminds them like, when we speak, it's actually about our whole self, right? So, and when I say that, you know what I'm doing right now is I'm actually putting my hand on my heart and my hand on my stomach. And that just happens intuitively because, again, when I have people speak, I have us warm up. We warm up our voices. We warm up our bodies. Why? Because suddenly people go, right, this is about my whole presence. Am I in ease? So if your body is tense and your voice is tense and one is stuck in their mind and overthinking, like, oh my God, you know, so it's just this, you know, this sort of like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? Not present in the moment, right? Like the breathing is off. This is why we warm up together, why we breathe together, we meditate together. Like literally it's about changing sort of this, you know, you know, I'm in a car and I'm going really fast, or I'm running down the street, or trying to get on BART, or, you know, doing a million things and I'm shoving down food. So this idea of, you know, of just trying to get something over with, what I'm doing is I'm saying like, actually we want to hear what you have to say. And I want you to be as present as you can in what you're saying versus sort of like, let me just throw it out there and forget about the body, you know. Forget about my voice. Forget about my eye contact. And I go the other way. I go, actually, speaking is about connecting, about making a connection. It's not about losing your voice. I want you to take care of your instrument. And if your body language is saying, I'm open, I'm breathing, I'm in touch with my heart. I'm feeling my feet on the ground. I'm not looking through people. I'm actually, as I speak, I'm actually looking at people. I'm pausing. I'm not running my sentences together and I have no wind, right? I'm taking a breath. The reason why I'm not substituting ums and ahs is also because I'm, you know, consciously taking a minute, taking a beat, just sort of, you know, being in the moment. And and I also recognize sometimes we'd say negative things to ourselves before we speak.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
I want to get this over with. This is lousy. I'm
yes.
going to make mistakes. You know,
yes.
right? Mm-hmm. Why'd I eat 12 waffles before I walked out the door? You know,
exactly.
I had 7 cups of coffee, right? So it's sort of all this chatter, and what I want is sort of like, okay, what can take a moment to clear the mind and say anything like, ah, I have something to say. I have something to offer. Even if I need to write it down, I'm here for a purpose. There's something I want to contribute to, you know, I want to connect with you. So when I see that people in class are working on those things, when I work with them in my public speaking workshops, I can see it because it's an exchange. So not only what people are saying feels different, but I can see that people are experiencing speaking differently because there's a comfort level. There's a comfort level with going from I want to get this over with, you know, or for any reason, I want to get this over with. I can't, you know, like, oh, it's terrifying to, I want to be of service here.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see even the change about how even somebody is showing us that they feel about themselves with what they're conveying with what they're saying. And so the intention. So it's interesting because when I teach public speaking, there are some parallels to acting, that authentic acting people, we talk about setting an intention. We talk about being in our body. We warm ourselves up so that we don't hurt our voice or our body. We're trying not to get stuck in the head, trying not to say negative messages, you know, all these things. But that's what's great about public speaking to me is when I have done different forms of public speaking myself. So I do public speaking because I'm a teacher, public speaking because I'm on a panel, public speaking because, right, I'm invited into a school and I could be speaking about any number of things. Do I feel nervous? Of course. So to me, all of these things we're doing is also how we're channeling those nerves. So, right, setting an intention, the positive mantra, the getting ourselves grounded, the warming up, the getting, you know, being connected. And I feel like there's nothing better than seeing in a class people going from, I see people get on their feet and kind of do some public speaking and just get it out. And then they get to go a second time. And most of the time, people always feel even better. And I'm like, you know what? And then I always tell them at some point in class, too, I say, you know what? That happens a lot of times for actors, too. It happens for most of us, right? Because it's almost like, oh, I see. This is the point of dress rehearsal, right? You get on your feet, you do it. And in some ways, people, I almost hope that, like, that's where a lot of, you know, quote-unquote mistakes can come up. Because then it can be like, oh, okay, I can shift this or I can adjust this. Oh, I'm so happy I did the dress rehearsal. Now I'm going to – so I go a second time, and I'm like, I've been here before, so I'm going to do something different, or I'll take a little risk, or I'll go a little further. So for me, class is about, you know, getting people on their feet and being able to try stuff on and play with stuff and, you know, and – I'm a big believer because of my acting training and doing warm-ups together and being able to perform in front of an audience together because then people are able to practice those skills. Like, I'm scared to look around the room and make eye contact. Okay, what would it be like if you looked around? What would it be like if you looked around a room and made eye contact?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then if you didn't, and then if you did, and what shifts? You know, and... Right, and so I, you know, at different times change the workshop, depending on if it's very focused on, let's say, I've gone to a law firm, and so then I'm talking to a group of folks, and it may be a certain kind of work they're doing internally in their firm or with their clients. I've had amazing experiences of working for, I want to say this will be my fourth year in January, of working with California Youth Connections with foster youth who do public speaking because they are part of the front line of addressing policymakers and changing policy around having it be empowering for youth and not disempowering in the foster youth system. And that is so incredible because no matter what group of people I have that I'm working with, you know, professionals, job seekers, entrepreneurs, that, you know, usually people will always say, if I say sort of what's your goal or your intention or your hope or your dream, somewhere somebody's going to say a lot of similar things like, you know, I'd love to, you know, change this policy and have or be able to present a policy this way, or I want to go to Washington, or I want to do a TED Talk, or I want to do a podcast someday.
Exactly.
Right? Like any number of those things, right? Yes. Or, you know, I've never been an actor, but I kind of want to get up and do a story tell someday. So I think all of these, I love to allow also for all of these opportunities to come into class. So I don't feel like public speaking is something that one size does not fit all, let's say.
Exactly. Now, I know, let everyone know, you have a class coming up, don't you?
Yes. So at Renaissance Entrepreneur Center over in San Francisco at SOMA, I have a workshop. There still is some spaces left in class. It's this Friday, the 15th, from 1 to 4, and for all professionals. And people can either, you know, reach me through tinadaliaconsulting.com or info@tinadalia.com and inquire about it, and I can sign them up. I'm excited.
Great. Tina, I want to spend some time before we have to say goodbye and talk about the work you've done with our youth. I mean, you know, a lot of times that goes unnoticed, but I know you, so you back in Boston, you know, I think it was our voices, because we were both so passionate, you know, in unity that brought us together, and the work over at Theater Offensive and Theater Rhino. But your work, especially with the young sisters in Boston, was so vital. You know, speak on that, because that was, you know, that was a big part of your life back there.
Right. Well, it was really, what was really exciting was I was in Boston from 91 to 98, and I love that I got to be part of a variety of things. So everything from sort of like spoken word, teaching youth, seeing what youth were doing, being part of like a performance poetry communities. So that was exciting. And then kind of go in and teach or teach poetry, so forth. But I remember, and I don't know if you remember this, but one play that did really well was called Motherland.
Yes. Remember it really well. Yes.
And I remember that, so they first did a workshop of it. So this is Bren Dakota and her former wife, formerly she was married to Noelia Oscalera, and they were an amazing team, and the workshop production, which was so powerful, was that they invited a bunch of high school students, all Latina, during the afternoon, and I'm thinking, I was like, I was like, at that point, I was like, I didn't know. I was like, are they allowed to watch a lot of making out and some, you know, like, because the love scenes had to be really passionate to sell it, which I'm very happy that they spend a lot of time wanting to be like, okay, the love scenes and the kissing has to be really passionate. And so they were in love with Noelia, who played the mother, because they thought the mother was tough and intense, and I think there was some relating to it. But I was thinking, like, is this all going to be too much? And I don't know if I'll ever get a response like that for the rest of my life. But after we were done doing the afternoon production, so I think we went backstage, and then we came out into the lobby, and myself and the other actor, the other woman of color actor, we were mobbed for autographs. Never seen anything like it. You know, I loved it because, of course, right, it was autographs back then, right? It's like, you know, now it's selfies, but there was no cell phone. So it was autographs. We were mobbed. I'd never had that happen. I almost was like, I'm having an out-of-body experience. Like, what, really? But I felt the power of, like, wow. I really felt like, you know, when people talk about how things have changed from 2000 to 2018 for young folks and young people of color, like, it's cool to see the impact that was going on, because every time I would ever be around young folks and I would have a sense, like, they may be coming out, they may not be, they're going to be out, hopefully they'll be allies, right, just, you know, queer allies and trans allies, that this is very exciting. So to just see sort of like, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like, I was like, young Latina girls are hungry. I was like, you are hungry. They're like, that was like, I was like, we need to create more content. We need to provide more opportunities. So there was, I feel like there was play. Like, I do remember working with True Colors, which has been going on forever with Theater Offensive. So working with Abe Ryback and Craig Hickman, an African-American performer, actor, with a bunch of youth and queer youth. So that was exciting one day, doing like a whole long day workshop. Do you remember Drag Kings, Sluts and Goddesses?
Oh, yes.
That, like, there were housefuls of people, but also, you know, this was, again, an entry point for some people, because they were trying to, again, create work. And that was true for me as well. I mean, I was already in my mid-20s, but this was another opportunity where people were creating, like, performance groups and singing groups and music and learning how to be producers and event planners. And if they hadn't been already, and directors. And so I was singing stuff and working with a musician, and then I was writing a sketch for another an African-American stand-up comedian and myself, and then I was playing Groucho. And so that was a whole venue that, like this is what I loved about Boston, is, you know, when someone would find something and be like, we're going to tap in because there's a whole community of folks that needs to be reached, we're going to do this. Great. So there were a couple things. Like, I remember there was a place in Dorchester where primarily African-American and Latina girls would come after school. It was called Girls on the Move. I would come and I would teach, like, a performance poetry workshop. I did that a couple of times. So, and I'm sure I'm not even remembering everything. I worked at the Boston Area Rape Crisis Center for 7.5 years. So every year I would try to do a fundraiser that involved artists. In the Bay Area, and sometimes I would go out to, like, places like Boston College and read some poetry and do a take back that night with the students. So what I loved about what I was involved in is that, you know, so many artists and performers and people were trying to, you know, get their voices, have their voices be heard. And I feel like what was linking me with so many people was writing and performance. I feel like that's where it started a lot. So if I didn't know somebody would be like, oh, you should check out this youth or this school or this opportunity. And this goes also back to Tina D'Elia, the community talent agent, you know, because they would be great to bring in for the Outriders conference, or they would be great to have in a slam, or, you know, you should invite this person to a slam. This is great. This would be their first time. Or, hey, did you go check out this artist for a slam? You should have them go perform at this other venue. Or, like, I remember I got to perform in Out for Laughs, and then I referred somebody, you know, to a comedy venue the next year. And so, so that was what I appreciated was I feel like there was many, many bridges of community work going on. And this is all before, like, web series and, you know, people were creating, right? All these videos.
And we
content.
Got the word out. We got the word out.
We did. Right.
You made me remember drag queen sluts and guys. I completely forgot about those days.
Yes. Yes. I mean, like, all these various opportunities that I was a part of were different ways, I feel like, that, you know, we were able to get things done. Like, I remember somebody had a salon I performed at a couple times, and I remember doing things at the ICA and the BCA and the Museum School had a performance gig. And so, and referring people and putting, you know, variety of little shows together, you know, shows and things together. So, what's exciting for me is, and I know that Boston is doing lots of amazing things. That it hasn't stopped; it's continuing. What's amazing to me is that, you know, back then, right? It was. You would, you know, call up on the phone, leave a voicemail message, you'd send an email. We started to send emails. And,
flyers going to the bars, dropping
and
it all.
Flyers like crazy.
Can we
flyer
post in your window?
Yes. Flyering. Always flyering, yes. Yes, and then getting on lists. That's right, listers.
Yes, yes,
that's right.
Yes.
Like, yep. So,
girl, how do you see this day and age? And you touched on it briefly earlier, and maybe this is where we can end. You are a very outspoken Latina. You know, how do you talk to the young people now and let them know with this hostile environment? You know, what's your community doing, and how do you stay positive with this? History repeating itself.
Right. I feel like, and I feel like this is my job as well, especially because being an adult is one, being so aware that, that of course I have to offer hope, because, you know, to be hopeless really means that I'm sending out messages that sort of there's nothing we can proactively do when we can, you know, that if it is about collectively, strategically, you know, making, you know, voting choices, making, you know, pushing something forward, creating a need, saying we're not going to wait for other people to tell our stories. We're going to find a way to tell ours. that, you know, that we're going to try to work with, you know, sort of connect a bunch of people together so that it's, so that, you know, if there does feel like there's a big gap between sort of like, oh, there's a grant out there, but, you know, it won't ever get to, how does it get to the people instead of connecting the people and community groups and underserved communities and marginalized mm-hmm. communities. I feel like that, feel like I'm clear, like there are certain commitments that haven't changed that I'm a part of. And, mm-hmm. And part of it, is, I love that you're bringing up youth and young folks, is I feel like, one, it's so important that I also get that, like, you know, let the youth lead, because they always want to lead too. And mm-hmm. so, and that also, you know, create the exchange of a relationship with the relationships as well, knowing like, yeah, so I've been here for a while and mm-hmm. I've been here for a while. I have lots to offer and we have lots to offer each other mm-hmm. and your voice does need to be heard. So I feel like what I have been able to do when I work, for instance, with youth and young folks as actors is I'm really focused on, you know, yes, giving perspective of sort of like there has been a past, there is a change, and you can keep changing it because already we know that, for instance, as women, you know, and as women, like, for instance, if we stand together and say, I'm thinking about women in the industry, let's say, and say, mm-hmm. like, great, so we're saying that, you know, hardly any of us writers are getting paid, hardly any of us directors, hardly any of us crew are getting paid, like, all these things are happening. It's just like, well, that has to change. We're going to make it change. Mm-hmm. We're going to make it change. We're going to vocalize that. We're going to push it forward. We're going to vote for that. And we're going to start backing each other's projects, and we're going to start putting our time and our attention into each other's work. And so for me, then what I say is, okay, so you're a young person and you're trying to get your work out there. What can I do to help support you to get your work out there? So is it connecting with people? Is it introducing you to people? Is it, you know, validating and reminding you like, some doors, maybe you're happy that they open, but some places, like, you know, I feel like my job is to always remind actors, like, I don't want you to think of this industry as there's only one opportunity and you have to work with a jerk. Mm. I'm like, no, like we can help each other find ways to work with each other and have that be exciting and compassionate and positive and professional and respectful. And that I just keep telling the world, I'm like, look out, because you are the producers of today and you are the directors of today and you are the writers of today. So we don't have to focus on this one door of this jerk that's open. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep focusing on each other. And so inviting folks to the Queer Women of Color Film Festival is always great. And for folks that don't know, like, hey, here's an opportunity where you can make a film and have support. Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. You know, inviting folks to the Transgender Film Festival, people seeing films throughout the world now, people seeing more and more trans actors acting and doing great work and creating really good content. And so,
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, right, and it goes back to, you know, solo performance as well, that, you know, that where I see, you know, sort of all ages, you know, coming on board. My hope is, and that was another thing that with Overlooked Latinas is there was a part of me that did envision bringing it to colleges for sure, but I actually was even more interested in bringing it to high school parts of it. So, you know, and I know that I'm not the only performer that does that with, you know, with work in the Bay Area as part of a tool to, you know, for education and awareness and empowerment and great.
Awesome. Awesome. Tina, I can't believe it's already past our time. Oh, wow. See, I told you.
old friends just getting reacquainted.
Yeah.
Before we go, tell everyone more time how they can reach you. Please give them Facebook, Instagram, however, all of it.
Right on. So, yes. So, Instagram, Tina D'Elia SF. Twitter, Tina D'Elia SF. Actor and solo performer, I'm at TinaD'Elia.com. And then as the public speaking coach and casting director, acting teacher, I'm at TinaD'EliaConsulting.com. And this, I just have to say, has been such a blessing and a pleasure and a joy. So I thank you so much. And I love Triple Play Podcast. Yeah.
Thank you so much, my dear sister. It has just been wonderful having you on. And you know, we're going to have you back as we get closer to 2018 and your one-woman show. You know, we will definitely have you come back and update us. But there's a lot of good things in store for you still, my sister. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So grateful.
Yeah, definitely. Right. And to everyone, thank you so much for listening to another great podcast. You know, it's just as we end this year, you know, what a better way to end it than with a dear friend. Tina D'Elia, thank you so much again.
Thank you. Thank you. Many blessings.
And yes, definitely. So with that in mind, again, let me tell everyone this is our last show for 2017. We want to thank you for all your past support and all your future support to come. Arif, your honor, and Denise, thank you again for your support. Everyone, have a great holiday, and we'll see you in 2018. Until then, good night.